everybody. I love my new intro song, and I'm Beattie Cohn-Vratos. And welcome, welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beattie Show. And for those of you who may be tuning in for the very first time and you're wondering, what is the Ask Beattie Show and who is Beattie Cohn-Vratos? Well, I am a psychotherapist and a sex therapist and the author of the groundbreaking book, a book that I am very, very proud of. I wrote it for my daughter, Jordana. The book is For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And this is a book that I wish I had had this book when I started out many, many years ago in my own dating and relationship life. It teaches us exactly how to assess who's right for you and who is wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. Because when you think about it, we assess everything in our life, our lipsticks, our cars, our computers, and our cell phones. And when we think about love and when we think about relationships, assessment is usually not one of the terms or one of the words that we would want to use. And yet it is absolutely, absolutely critical. And what I have discovered over the past 35 years, and every week when I say that I've been practicing for over 35 years, I can hardly believe it, but it has really been a wonderful, wonderful experience for me. I have met people from all over the world, people who I normally would probably never run into in my personal life. But I want to, again, I want to emphasize to you the three things that we all need to do, the three things that we all need to know so that we are never going to make a mistake in love again. And number one, each of us needs to be in a good place emotionally, psychologically, psychiatrically. We need to be willing and we need to be serious to work out our own issues. And of course, many of our own issues began with our own families of origin. And I know it is the dream, it is the hope that if we meet someone who is going to sweep us off our feet, that we are not gonna have to deal with the depression and the anxiety and perhaps the early child sexual abuse or sexual assault that we experienced in previous years. And yet that is simply not true. I wish it was so, but in order to have a healthy relationship, there really needs to be two basically healthy individuals. So that's step number one. Step number two, we all need to become educators and we need to become students of the ingredients that actually go into a healthy relationship. And my hope, and my hope has been for many, many years, is that serious relationship education would begin in the schools, as it did when I was one of the three directors of the Greater Montreal School Social Services Program many, many years ago. Because when you think about it, when we look at all of the relationship shows and the relationship drama that we read about and we see in the media, we are really not learning about the fundamentals that need to be present if a relationship is to succeed. And of course, number three is my formula based on my research and my book, again, which teaches you exactly how to assess. And I know it doesn't sound romantic and it doesn't sound sexy, but assessing who your partner is and who your partner is not actually happens to be something that's really, really important. In fact, before I did my research, I was, and I'd like to think that I'm a pretty spontaneous person. So I would meet a man or I'd meet a woman and I would come home and I would say, I met this really lovely person. I really met this person who seems to be, trustworthy worthy. And after doing the research, and of course, after all this clinical work, I would never, ever make that kind of statement again. The best I could say would be I met somebody who appears to be lovely and appears to be trustworthy. And hear this, my friends, what my research found was that it actually takes about a year using my formula to find out who somebody is and who somebody is not. And I wish that we could fast forward the process, but we can. Of course, if you're starting to see a lot of red flags, you're not going to stay in a relationship, for a year. You have to give yourself permission. And this is really what the Ask BD show is about. It's about giving yourself permission to do the things that will help us all maximize our physical and emotional well-being. So what do we talk about on the Ask BD show? In fact, today is the 351st Ask BD show that I have been doing here on the Progressive Radio Network. And I started off years and years ago on WPRO in Providence, Rhode Island. It was actually a call-in counseling radio talk show. So here we are all these years later talking about mental health and talking about sexuality and relationships. But I think the most important thing that we all need to recognize is that we all go through lots and lots of ups and downs in our lives, and nobody is immune from life stressors. But the real question, and this is a question that I ask my patients every single hour of every single day, is, are you actually willing? And willing is the key to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can, because we certainly can't change our history. We can't change anything that happened 10 seconds ago. But are you willing to deal and resolve as best as we can the issues that get in the way of our lives and in the way of our relationships? And what I hope that I have convinced all of you over the years is that we do not need to take this journey on our own. It is way, way too difficult. And that's why reaching out to family and friends and having support groups and communities, whether or not it's religious communities or social communities, is something that is just so important for our well-being. And if you're finding that your friends and your families and your contacts are not quite able to help you deal with the issues that continue to get in the way of your life, you do need to give yourself permission to reach out and ask for help. Because when you look at what's going on mental health-wise in America, there are 17 million adults in the United States that are suffering from depression. And I actually think that that number is probably low. And Americans do suffer from depression, which translates into 7.1% of all adults, and for women, 8.7%. And we're looking at anxiety disorders. 40 million Americans are suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. And look at what is going on in the world of domestic violence. Four women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partner. And if you look at the suicide rate, suicide is the 10th leading cause of death here in the United States. And of course, divorce, and we're going to be talking about gray divorce with two of my amazing guests in a couple of moments. 48% of first marriages end in divorce. 67% of second marriages end, and 74% of third marriages end in a divorce court in front of a judge. What about teenage dating violence? Nearly 1 in 11 females and approximately 1 in 14 male high school students have reported experiencing physical dating violence in the last year. Who would have thought? I mean, when I was growing up in Winnipeg in Canada, I mean, physical violence, that was never, I hope it actually never did occur, but it was something that never was spoken about. And what's really upsetting is only 33% of teens who were in abusive relationships ever told anyone about the abuse. And interestingly, that 81% of parents currently believe that teen dating violence is not an issue. So again, you know, I've been saying this for years and years, the importance of relationship education so that we really have clarity about what a successful, healthy relationship looks like and what does it not look like as well. We need to know the difference, and that is the only way that we're going to be able to really keep ourselves safe. And my weekly reminders of how to improve your everyday life. Of course, Gary Null talks about the plant-based diets, the fruits, the vegetables, the grains. And we have to be really mindful of what we are putting in our mouths and in our stomachs. We have to make sure that we are interacting and socializing and getting enough sleep. And of course, exercise and weight training. And I know that you hear this from people all the time, but it really does make an incredible difference in our physical and in our mental and emotional and psychological well-being. And of course, again, the importance of having really supportive people in your life and eliminating toxins of every kind. And when Gary Null talks about toxins, he usually talks about toxins in our foods and in our environment. And when Beattie Covretos talks about toxins, I typically talk about toxic people and how it is important to eliminate toxic people and toxic relationships, and whether that means friends or families, because if we allow it, if we enable it, if we engage in toxicity, it can really kill you physically and emotionally. You know, other things that really help to make our day-to-day lives happier and better, dancing and listening to music and aromatherapy. And what I have found in some of the most difficult times that I've had is that helping others, I think sometimes I wonder whether the people who, you know, I help, the ability that I have to be able to help others, you know, who's gotten more out of it, whether or not it's been them, hopefully, but also helping others has been just something very, very important in my life. And again, being aware of eliminating sugars and soda, and you hear this all the time. And it's really important. It's really important to be very, very mindful as we navigate our days. And this is the homework that I actually give every single patient after every single session. The homework is to be very, very mindful of doing what is in our best interest. And sometimes doing what is in our best interest doesn't feel right because we are used to a destructive or self-destructive mode of operating. So that's my hope for you. And that's my message for you, is that as you navigate your own days, you're going to think about doing things that are good for you physically, emotionally, and psychologically. Well, we are going to be talking about gray divorce. And I don't know how many of you have been following the Bill and Melinda Gates divorce story. And they were married for 27 years. But what we are finding is that increasing numbers of older Americans are getting divorced. And the divorce rate actually has roughly doubled since the 1990s for American adults ages 50 and over. And the divorce rate for people over 50 who've been married more than once is 2.5 times higher than those who have been coupled with the same person throughout their life. So why is this happening, and what should women in particular do to protect themselves emotionally, financially, and legally? Well, I have two guests today who are going to be able to give you some real insight, both in the legal arena and in the financial area, about what you should actually do that is in your best interest if you are somebody who is going to be going through a divorce. And my first guest is Stacey Francis. Stacey, welcome, welcome to the Ask Beattie Show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm always excited to have you on the show. And Stacey is a nationally recognized financial expert and president and CEO of Francis Financial. She is a certified planner and a certified divorce financial analyst who provides advice to women going through transitions such as divorce, widowhood, and sudden wealth. And she is also the founder of Savvy Ladies, a great nonprofit that has already provided free personal and financial education and resources to over 15,000 women. And my second guest, and I am so eager to meet Lisa Zeiderman in person. Welcome, welcome, Lisa.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you, and I want everybody to know that you are a matrimonial attorney extraordinaire and a managing partner at Miller Zeiderman. Lisa is a certified divorce financial analyst and regularly handles complex financial and custody divorce matters for high net worth individuals. And of course, you were named a 2020. I was so impressed to be reading about this yesterday. 10 best family law attorney for client satisfaction by the American Institute of Family Law Attorneys. Ms. Zeiderman is also a founding member of the American Academy of Certified Financial Litigators and a member of the panel for Attorneys for Children. And I could probably spend the entire show reading and talking about your bios, but let's get into the issues. What is going on here? Lisa, first of all, are you finding in your practice that there is a pattern or a new pattern that you're seeing in terms of the people who are seeking your services for divorce?
So I am seeing a pattern. I don't know if it's necessarily a new pattern, but it is definitely an increase in that pattern. And that is many people who are coming to me for divorces after their children are grown. So their children are either going off to college or in the middle of completing college, or maybe having completed college, and they are now feeling that they are free to go and get, frankly, their divorce. And that is something different that I was seeing all along. I think this is much more of an increase in that population.
Mm-hmm. And what are the profiles? I mean, do you see primarily women? I know that you represented the former mayor Giuliani, but do you see primarily women who are seeking your advice?
So I see both men and women. And I'm going to say that for the women, it varies as to moms who are stay-at-home moms versus women who are executives. I see both. And in both cases, many of those women decided that they were going to stay in the marriage because they felt that it was better for the children, not to uproot the children. And particularly if they had careers, they felt that there was just too much turmoil for them with their careers, balancing career and family life. But men also, I think that at that point, when the children are grown, they are perhaps at that moment ready to move on and make a life change. And maybe there's just less in common that they all had because they were in the household with the children and now they're not.
Uh-huh. And they're giving themselves permission to live lives in a more vital and satisfying way than to just to continue on, business as usual. Because I think in the past that many couples would remain in these empty shell marriages, largely because separations were stigmatized or couples didn't believe in divorce. So there's been a big change in the last number of years. And Stacey, before people marry, and I know that you focus a lot on women, what should we be doing to protect ourselves financially before we get married?
You know, it's interesting. Stacey and I speak about this all the time. Women should be entering into prenuptial agreements. And the reason is that prenuptial agreements are really a way to become transparent and knowledgeable about your finances, but it's also a roadmap for what your life is going to be. So no matter what your prenup says, you can then be prepared to decide whether you're going to dive into your career, whether you're going to have the wherewithal to be a stay-at-home mom. Whatever it is, you will have it laid out and set forth in your prenup. And so I think it's so important that women in particular enter into prenups. I also think it's so important, and again, you know, Stacey and I were discussing this last week, I think it's so important that women make sure that those prenups are going to take care of them financially, that they are not going to be left in situations where they have sacrificed and given up everything. And then, you know, on top of that, essentially ignored the prenuptial terms and forgotten about them, tucked away their prenup and said, you know, I don't have to worry about the prenup. I'm going to be taken care of. Instead, they need to pay attention to the prenup when negotiating it. And then they need to pay attention to the prenup as they are moving through their marriage. And if they need a change, they need to actually find an attorney and draft a postnuptial agreement, because those exist as well.
You see, there's so many pragmatic things, you know, including, you know, you heard me talk about the importance of assessing who your partner is and his and is not. There's so many important and unsexy and unromantic things that we actually need to think about that we don't. And then we wonder, like, oh my God, how could we possibly be and find ourselves in this kind of a situation? I mean, I have a patient, and this is actually a story that is truly hard to believe. She met a man, she fell in love, although I've said to her, you married somebody who you didn't know. And literally 2 hours before the wedding ceremony, this man's assistant arrives. She's doing her hair, she's doing her makeup, she's looking beautiful, beautiful for the ceremony, and hands her a document, Lisa and Stacy. And obviously she didn't read it in depth, and she signed it. And what she did, and I'm hoping, Lisa, you know, after the show, we're going to be able to talk about this situation. She signed away any possible support. The document basically stated she could keep what she had and he could keep what he had, which was, you know, tremendous, tremendous wealth, ongoing wealth. And she signed away her financial future. And now we're going to have to try to figure out a way. And hopefully, Lisa and Stacy, you're going to be able to help what to do. And I wonder, you know, how many women, A, never think about talking about money because it's not romantic and it's not sexy. But when they do agree to sign a prenup or a postnup, whether or not, as you know, as you were saying, whether they really know what it is that they are signing, or whether they're signing away their security and support if, God forbid, the marriage ends.
Mm-hmm. That's the economic outcome can be absolutely disastrous, especially for that person of waiving, you know, spousal support. And, you know, Lisa can talk a little bit about how, you know, that prenup may not stand up, because it sounds like it was definitely signed under what we call duress. But,
right,
you know,
right.
you know, it comes into a bigger conversation about gray divorce, women, and money. And what we are seeing, number one, a significant increase in gray divorce rate, essentially doubling since 1990 for those age 50 and older. Right. And we're seeing women and the financial consequences play out, so much so that 20% of women who are age 65 and older and divorced, they live in poverty. They live in poverty, and they are much less financially secure than their married or widowed friends. And, you know, there are a lot of factors that go into it. This is a trend that is going to continue. And unfortunately, a lot of women are looking at going into divorce, and they're not at all financially prepared.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that probably this should be an issue and a subject. I can't really quite imagine that ministers and rabbis and priests, if they were, you know, counseling couples before they got married. But I mean, this is an issue that I think really needs to be discussed. And, you know, just like sex, money, prenups, postnups, how many children we're going to have, where we're going to live. These are discussions that really ought to be taking place. And for the most part, they're not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think this is something in terms of education. I think maybe some of the people listening to us right now, they might believe, and I think incorrectly, that we're talking only about high net worth individuals. But that's not true, right, Lisa and Stacey?
It's not true. It applies to anyone. You know, people who come out and they graduate law school or they graduate college, they may be entering into marriages. They may have absolutely no money right now. In fact, they may be in debt. But it does apply to them as well, because they're going to be entering into these prenups, and they need to be able to think far into the future. And, you know, Stacey talked about this somewhat just now. One of the things that we are finding, and I think it is a trend, is many women who have not thought out the prenup. You just talked about it as well, Bibi. And the issue is that you are going to see a lawyer. You should be taking your lawyer's advice. You should be listening. Why would you go to a doctor and not actually listen to your doctor if your doctor said, take this prescription or take that prescription? And so many times we see people, women and men, who come to us and they say, you know what, I'm just going to sign it. I'm just going to sign it because I'm in love, right, and I'm sure it's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and, you know, that's an educational component piece that, you know, hopefully we're going to be able to convince more and more people, you know, about considering some of these unromantic but critical and pragmatic issues that, you know, can save their lives and can save their souls, you know, if something starts to really get off track. But, you know, I've heard, you know, so oftentimes in my practice over the years, but, you know, I'm not comfortable talking about that. Well, of course, as a psychotherapist, you know, that's something that I need, and I do, you know, try to get my patients to really work through that. It's, you know, their comfort level today may be, you know, a little bit difficult, but, you know, up the road, their comfort level, if they don't deal, acknowledge, address, and resolve some of these issues, they certainly can find themselves in hot water. What other advice, Stacey and Lisa, can you give couples, you know, as they are both entering marriages and exiting marriages?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm happy to jump in on that. I mean, the number one thing is to be an active participant in your marriage. And when I say that, everyone immediately thinks, well, of course I'm going to be an active participant. Well, that also means an active participant in the money, because we know that marriage is lots of things. And one of them, if you look up in the Webster Dictionary, is an economic union. Right. And we see far too many couples, one of them not really understanding the expenses, not knowing the income, not understanding and even knowing about what the assets are. And, you know, how are you going to make sound decisions about your money if you don't know what it looks like? And one of the things we do see with couples who have been together for many years, that as they, you know, enter into retirement, money issues can become amplified. Because when the primary breadwinner was earning a lot of money during those primary earning years, you know, financial mistakes can be overlooked, right? But when Right. you're in retirement or approaching retirement, if you're not on the same page financially, let's say one person is outspending the other, there's control issues between the two, it's like pouring gas on a fire. And there's less time to make up for blunders, causes conflict, and money is one of the top three reasons that people get divorced. So knowing what the money is all about, being an active partner, and having these money conversations where I know you come in, Beattie, is really key to having a long-term happy marriage.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, as we women have become so much more independent and empowered over the years, at least theoretically, and I think really in practice as well, that more and more women are giving themselves permission to protect themselves and really talk about the nitty gritty financial situation and legal situation before entering into a serious relationship like a marriage? Are we doing better is really what I want to know, Lisa and Stacy.
So I don't think we're necessarily doing better. I think that the truth is that there is still a gap between women and money, and that women, as Stacy said, don't always want to talk about money. And that is an issue. I also think that there is still a situation where it is more likely than not that it is the woman who is going to be staying home and caring for the children to some greater length of time than necessarily the father in a relationship. And I think that because of that, because women are at some point leave the workplace, they lose that ground. They lose that ability to move ahead at levels that male counterparts are moving ahead. And so I think that there is still an issue. I don't think we're necessarily doing better. And if we are, maybe it's so minuscule, frankly, as in comparison to what we should be doing, because women are much more educated. The problem is that they still, I think, fall into this area where they believe someone is going to take care of them, or they believe, don't worry, I'll take care of you. Let me build my career and you'll stay home and take care of the children. And everything is ours anyway. But the truth is that divorce is not kind to women in terms of spousal support. And when you've lost that ability to move ahead in your career, it's always going to show in your income. It's very hard to make up those lost years and to be on the same track as someone who has stayed in the workforce year after year after year. So I think that from my point of view, that's so important that women stay in the workforce.
Mm-hmm. And certainly be involved, and if they're not in the workforce, certainly to be involved in knowing about what is going on in their personal world of finances. And you know, I think too, you know, when I talk about my formula, how to assess who's right for you, who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship, I think that there are many, many issues that women, and of course men too, but are reluctant to bring up. They don't want to ruin the relationship. They don't want to make waves. And of course, you know, I always encourage people to bring up the tough subjects, because if we can't discuss the tough subjects, we are headed down a really dangerous and disastrous path, because I sure would want to know how my future husband felt about money and prenups and postnups and my staying home with the children before I got married. That is a really, really important bit of information and knowledge that we have to know. What is our partner's reaction going to be? Is there going to be a desire to discuss, to compromise, to make trade-offs, to come up with a win-win resolution? Or is my partner, on the other hand, going to say, no, 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 I don't want to talk about this, as what happened with my patient who signed a postnup or prenup? In fact, I was talking to her today and I said, do you know whether it was a prenup or a postnup? And this is a really, really smart woman, by the way. She had no idea what it was. She had no idea what she signed. And I was very happy to hear you say, Lisa, that it was signed under duress. So we're going to have to get some real help for this woman to make sure that she's not going to end up in a worse situation if, in fact, she moves forward and gets a divorce. But no, I think bringing up the tough subjects are really critical in being able to determine what kind of a match, what kind of a potential match we're going to have up the road. So I'm really glad to hear you both say that these are subjects that absolutely should be talked about, whether or not we feel uncomfortable or not.
So I think that the issue really is that these are great subjects to talk about and great subjects to negotiate as part of a prenuptial agreement. These are that's the place that you can really protect yourself. And if you want to be a stay-at-home mom, that's great. And if you and your spouse-to-be want you to be a stay-at-home mom or you want to be a stay-at-home father, that's all wonderful. But then there should be language and allowances and essentially a roadmap of how you are going to be able to take care of yourself in the event of a divorce. That's really the question. And the time to negotiate all of this is when you are the most in love, right? You're going to be getting married to this person. You should be able to trust this person.
Uh-huh. And Lisa, you nail it on the head because, you know, the court system is not kind when it comes to alimony and maintenance. And, you know, a couple can decide together, we need to have you stay home. I'm going to take care of you. But when push comes to shove and it turns out that the marriage is going splitsville, we find that many of these women are forced to scramble for low-paying jobs. They've been out of the workforce 5, 10, 20, even 25 years, nearing their retirement age and finding themselves significantly behind. And these are all the factors that add up to why we have that scary statistic of 20% of all women divorced age 65 and older are living in poverty. And when I say poverty, they're living and subsisting primarily on their Social Security check. And that average check is typically about $2,000 to $2,500 if they're lucky a month. Can you live on that? Not so easily, especially if we have ongoing health issues and health costs. And women on average, we live significantly longer. Uh-huh. One out of every four 65-year-olds today, they're going to live well past 90. And women need to think about themselves. Do they love themselves as much in the future as they love themselves now? And the answer is yes. So it means that you need to protect her because no one else is going to.
Financially, emotionally, and in every other way. Lisa, I'm so curious about this question that I'm going to ask you. How do you find typically when a couple comes in to see you for a prenup or a postnup, how do you find that the man is responding to being asked, although he, I suppose, could initiate the prenup or the postnup as well, how have you found that the men respond to having to really negotiate with their beloved about money, big amounts of money in many cases.
So first of all, we only meet with one of the two of the couple, because each of the couple is represented by different attorneys. So whichever party I'm going to meet with, whether it be the male or the female, there will be another attorney who will be negotiating with me and trying to bring this to an agreement that both people can actually be comfortable in for their marriage. So that's the first piece of it. But I would say there are many men who I represent and who I draft prenups for, and they want to be fair. It's not that they don't want to be fair. They do want to be fair, and they understand that this is a negotiation. But I also think that both parties need to understand that it's a negotiation, that they really need to put aside some of their feelings, some of that kind of love is blind, and start reading the documents and start understanding, as Stacey said, that this is a financial partnership, that you're about actually to form essentially a contract, right? That is in some ways a business. And they need to understand that. And they need to both be aware and negotiating their business arrangement so that they can move on with happier things such as honeymoons and weddings and all of those wonderful things. But before they get to that wedding, and frankly, before they book that wedding, they should actually be negotiating this prenup.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And Lisa, I think that what you said was really key of, they should be doing that ahead of time. This is not a last minute, as you mentioned, BD, the literally ready to walk up the aisle. That's not the time to do this. This is, something that you should be starting well in advance. And I'll share the story of a woman, and I can share her name because she appeared in a film that I was in as well. So it's very public and out there. And the film is called Savvy, S-A-V-V-Y. And it's a film about financial literacy for women and why it's so important. And Caitlin shared why she asked her soon-to-be husband why she wanted a prenup. And she shares in the meeting that, in the movie, that it was an uncomfortable conversation, but that after they spoke, he understood, he got it, and they're closer than ever because they're completely on the same financial page. And how powerful is that? So it's one of those things where it may be an uncomfortable conversation in the moment, but just as, us women, we go to the gynecologist once or twice a year. I don't know about you, but I do not look forward to those meetings. It's not a comfortable situation to go to the doctor and get that exam, but I do it because I know it's important for my health. Well, this conversation is a small time in your life for your financial health for the rest of your life.
No, exactly. And I think that, if the person who you think you may want to spend the rest of your life with is reluctant to come to the table and talk about these issues, if that is not a red flag that we should all take very, very seriously. Because what that's really saying is that I don't really care about you. I don't really care about your worries, your concerns, your future. If something happens, whether or not I die in an accident or whether or not we get a divorce. So that is, when you think about it, it's a really important bit of information that we need to find out about somebody who we think we may want to spend the rest of our life with.
I'm also going to add something, BD, that is important. So sometimes some of the prenups have what's called the sunset clause, which means that the prenup becomes null and void at a certain point. And with gray divorce becoming so important now in terms of basically a lot of people leaving the marriages after their children are grown, it is going to be important perhaps to rethink that sunset clause and to make sure that you have protected yourself after your children are grown, when you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s. I mean, I have had divorces where people are in their 90s. So I have to say that it's something that is going to be, I think, very important in terms of this roadmap for the future, making sure that you're thinking way into the future.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, this is why most people would need to have conversations with you, Lisa, and with you, Stacy. I mean, that's something, you know, just as you're saying that, you know, I was thinking, gee, I wouldn't have thought about that. And I'd like to think of myself as a pretty savvy woman, but I would not have thought about a sunset clause and about maybe going back to see an attorney and revisiting, you know, that issue, particularly what we are starting to see with, you know, this grade divorce situation. So there's a lot of knowledge. And there are a lot of things that we have to be willing and open to really consider when we're thinking about love and marriage and living happily ever after. Unromantic, unsexy, but critical. Right?
Exactly.
Absolutely. And I'm not so sure it's so unromantic or so not sexy. There is something very sexy about honesty, about becoming naked about your finances. And so I don't necessarily think it is about a conversation that doesn't have to be sexy. I think that when there is some feeling of control, that there is also some feeling of sexiness. And when I'm talking about control, I'm not talking about controlling the other person. I'm talking about taking control of your own life.
No, I think your point, you know, when you frame it like that, it's absolutely true, because what is more sexy than being with somebody who you can trust and who you feel safe with emotionally, financially, and legally? And so what percentage of couples do you both feel should have prenups and postnups, whether or not it's just, you know, people who have a lot of money, or whether or not, as you were saying, people who may be wanting to get married to somebody who has a lot of student loan debt? I mean, are you both advising that this should be just something that the majority of couples should consider seriously before getting married?
So I have a non-legal view. And my non-legal view is that most people have some financial wrinkle in their life. It could be previous children. It could be a parent they're supporting. It could be a large inheritance that they received before the marriage they want to keep separate, or assets they brought to the marriage. One spouse could decide to stay home and take care of the children. One spouse could be coming in with hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. There are so many financial wrinkles that you could think about, and so many iterations. It's a document that I think can be helpful to everyone. And I think what's really important too, and you talked about this, BD, that most people, when we think about prenuptial agreements, we think about the ultra wealthy.
Right.
Maybe that was true. Maybe that was true decades ago, and Lisa, I'll have you jump in. But I want to go back to Caitlin in the movie Savvy. She was relatively young, still is, and, you know, not coming in with a huge amount of assets, a little bit, but she really wanted this to make sure, again, that they're on the same page, that they have honest conversations, and that they're both, not just her, but they're both protected. So that's my thought. But Lisa, I'd love to hear what you'd say.
So I think that it's so important for everyone, frankly, given the cost of litigation and given the time that it takes to, frankly, unpack and unwind a marriage, that it's so important for everyone to have a prenup, whether it be to protect you against debt or wasteful dissipation of assets or various issues that are going to come up in marriage. I agree with you, Stacey. There is always a financial wrinkle. And the more that you can iron out, literally iron out those wrinkles, the more you will be able to proceed in your marriage, and in the event that you have a divorce, the more you will be able to, frankly, save resources because you have dealt with those issues before and you're not spending all of this hard-earned monies on attorney's fees for litigation purposes. So prenups for everyone, as far as I'm concerned.
Wow. That sounds like such good, pragmatic, practical advice. You know, and I'm just envisioning, you know, I'm in my office now in New York City, and I can envision, you know, a number of different couples and having a conversation about, and what if? And what if this happens? And what if that happens? And of course, having either you, Stacy, or Lisa joining us to talk about eventualities that most of us may never, ever think about, right? Until it happens, until there's a crisis. You know, what happens if you're not able to work, or what happens if our child, you know, suddenly becomes sick and has hundreds of thousands of dollars of medical bills and we get divorced. So there are so many, when I think about it, I mean, there are just so many what ifs that really do need to be acknowledged and addressed and resolved. And these what ifs are incorporated into the prenup, postnup agreements.
You can definitely, you know, add in a lot of what ifs. And the piece that I would say, too, that is really important is that what a prenup can do, or a postnup, it can make sure that you stay in your marriage because you want to be there instead of feeling like you have to be. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of individuals, when they come to myself or Lisa, their biggest concern is about how are they going to survive financially. And many times they do decide that they're going to go back to that marriage because the prospect of being financially destitute or, you know, worst off is a greater concern. And so, again, being trapped in an unhealthy, unhappy, hollow marriage because of dollars. And so that's why this planning is so important. You know, and your partner doesn't want you to be with them for money, right? No one wants to be with someone for money and just money.
No, exactly. You know, another thing that I'm curious about is the people who you see, Lisa, who are coming to you to file for divorce or to talk about divorce, have most of them had counseling? Have they had individual counseling? Have they had couples counseling before making, you know, which is a very big decision to end the marriage?
Most of them have actually had counseling, and many of them have actually gone to counseling together, marriage counseling, either separately and then together. But many, many have gone to counseling. And so many people actually have tried to work on their marriage before they come to us. I will say, look, the pandemic definitely, I think, sped things along in a large degree. People being essentially locked up in a house or an apartment together was not easy for a lot of couples, particularly right. those couples who maybe were able to get through their marriage because they had other distractions, whether right. it be the ability to go out to dinner with friends or do other things. So I do think the pandemic made a difference. So are there certain people who may have come to us without any counseling because of the pandemic? Sure. But I think that many people come to me years in advance. They might have a consultation, and then they may put it on the back burner. Many of those people during the pandemic came back to me because they had been thinking about it, and they realized that life could be very short, given, you know, the issues of the pandemic, and that they just couldn't do it anymore. They could not be in a household anymore with someone who they just didn't really want to spend the rest of their lives with.
Right, right. And again, I think it is about giving ourselves permission, you know, as difficult as it may be at different times, to really do what is in our best interest. You know, Stacy and Lisa, I'm looking at the time. I cannot believe that an hour is almost come and gone, and we could continue this conversation for sure for hours and hours. But I want to thank you both so much for, you know, coming on the show. And this conversation certainly will be continued. Stacy Francis, nationally recognized financial expert and president of CEO of Francis Financial. And Lisa Zeiderman, matrimonial attorney and managing partner at Miller Zeiderman. So listen, again, thank you so much. And we'll definitely have to get together very soon. And again, thank you for your wisdom and wonderful advice. And take good care.
Thank you. You take good care too.
Okay, bye-bye. Very, very important advice. And, you know, as Lisa was saying, talking about money and having a sense of security and feeling that you can be really honest and open with your partner. In fact, that is very, very sexy. And I want to just mention something. You know, there was a piece in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago, and the headline was, you know, counseling is not only for couples in crisis. And of course, I have to say that every single couple that I see and that I've seen over the years, they never, ever call and talk about, gee, we want to improve our communication or our problem-solving skills. They always, always come when there is a major crisis, oftentimes an extramarital affair. So what I hope I am able to do is to encourage all of you, whether or not you're talking about individual issues or whether we're not talking about couple issues, is that when things start to get off track and you're finding that you're just going around and around and around in circles and the same issues are coming up over and over and over again and nothing seems to be, you know, getting resolved, that you give yourself permission to reach out and ask for help and getting a second opinion. It's really a good thing to do, because you look at it this way: the same way that we go to the gym and exercise our muscles and you know, continuously, we also need to exercise our emotional muscles in the same kind of way. And how wonderful it is, you know, when things, you know, start to come up and you're starting to get a little worried that they may very well, you know, continue to interfere with the fabric of your relationship and your love and your life, you know, to again, just get a second opinion. And couples counseling, a lot of people think, oh, if I start marriage counseling or couples counseling, you know, I'm going to be there for years. Not at all true. In fact, the good news is that when issues do start to arise, if you are able and wanting and willing and serious to tackle them early on, you're going to be able to curtail problems escalating up the road. So everybody, I can't believe that an hour every week here on the Ask Beattie Show really does. It comes and it goes very, very quickly. And I want to thank you all again for listening and for texting and for emailing me and for going to the Progressive Radio Network archives. I really appreciate all of the, you know, wonderful feedback. And if you have questions and if you disagree with me, that's okay too. So I want to leave you with my two weekly reminders and messages. And the first message, and we're not just talking about money in terms of taking care of yourself, but to make sure that you do everything that you could possibly do to take care of yourself, to be good to yourself, and to love yourself. And the second message, of course, is that we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to love each other. I hope you have enjoyed today's show and that you took in all of the really good information that Lisa Zeiderman and Stacey Francis, you know, had to communicate to all of us. So have a really good rest of the day. And I will talk with you actually in 2 weeks. Next week is Memorial Day. Jim and I are going to have an extra long weekend. So take good care, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye, everybody.